We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, paid the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice, that's why. All my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life.
Welcome to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Both of us live in studio on this hot, hot, hot Tuesday. I'm digging it, man. I can dig the 93, the sun. I love this. Darren, how you doing?
I mean, I feel like a new man. My 30-day challenge ended, so.
How'd that go? Did you step on the scale yet?
First of all, I tagged you on Facebook, even sent you a picture with the text message letting you know what happened.
You didn't send me a text message?
I did. You don't pay attention to stuff.
Oh. You sent me it says 3 p.m. It's 3 o'clock now, Darren.
Yeah, but I tagged you on Facebook.
Well, I didn't see that. I actually didn't see that. I'm not on Facebook.
That's whose fault is that?
Nice. 41 pounds. Darren, congratulations.
Thank you.
Crushing it.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is awesome.
I got 95 more to go. So.
Well, now I got to see. Look, I got the notification bell still there. Just I didn't like click on it and go through. I just didn't see it because I wasn't on Facebook.
Yeah. So, I didn't get a chance to work out today. I was doing so much trading that I was working on my trading. By the time I finished that and had the Chiefs presser, it was like, I need to go weigh myself. So I went to Genesis, went to weigh myself. He's like, you want to work? I said, no, I got to be on the air at 3 o'clock. Came here, and so I had, I was in the restroom. I was stripping down. I was sitting thinking like, damn. I was nervous to get on that, to get on it, because even I kind of weighed myself last week. I was like, okay, yeah, hoping I didn't go up for anything from where I was. And when I weighed myself before I went to Oregon, I was 297.
Nice. And so, still got a couple off. Still shaved a few down.
Shaved three down. And so it was just one of those things where I was I just wondered what the finished product was going to be. And then, I called my brother, let him know, like, hey, man, this is what I've done. I thought you should be the first to know this. And when I did, he was happy. And, so he was like, man, he said, I know you want to get down to 200. He said, but, man, we're going to get you down to 250. And then, you'll see how you'll – see how you look, see how you like that weight. He said, because I'll probably be cut, whatever. I'm going to go pick up, like I said, the commercial treadmill tomorrow. So give me something to do either before trading in the morning or, while I'm watching Undisputed or something. And then at night and the evening time, I'll be able to just, get on that. I mean, I can, like I said, get on my bike/elliptical, but I prefer a treadmill. It's just easier on my knees.
I think it's the opposite. Shocking. It's way worse than your knees.
Well, technically it is, but I feel more comfortable on the treadmill versus the bike. For whatever reason, I get real tired on the bike easily.
Dude, I can't do treadmills. They kill me. Treadmills just destroy my knees.
But again, I'm not running either.
That's
I'm
fair.
Just so I'm walking between 3.0 and 4.0 miles. I'm walking for 30, 45 minutes. Seriously, it'd be no different if I'm walking around Arrowhead Stadium or something.
Sure.
So that's how I look at it.
Well, congratulations, Darren. That is awesome.
Thank you.
You know what's not awesome?
Your Philadelphia 76ers. oh, I'm sorry.
That's
the Kansas City
third
Royals.
Segment. That's later on. Get to NBA and that disaster debacle.
Yeah.
The 4-20 Joel Embiid. No, but the biggest debacle is the Kansas City Royals. The Royals fall again. That's 9 of their last 10 they have lost. Couple that with a 11-game losing streak early in the season, and what was once a promising start has turned into a disaster. This is why when you asked me if I wanted to change my record prediction early on when they were the best team in baseball, I said, nah. Well, let me leave it where it is, and we'll see what happens. Well, we're seeing what happens. The bottom has fallen out. There's now getting calls for firings for either the pitching coach, the hitting coach. Last night, Royals, 14 hits, 4 walks, 3 runs. Historically incompetent with runners in scoring position. The pitching has been miserable, to put it mildly. I mean, Brad Keller got shelled last night.
Oh, six earned runs.
Daniel Lynch, Jackson Cohar, two of the young studs come up, and they have the yips. They have, like I don't know if the Royals just don't know how to prepare guys for the majors, because it's not like they were walking guys. I guess if you want to take it the positive spin, it's not like they were getting shelled when they had their best stuff. But the realistic take on this is they just look nervous. They look like they didn't want to be out there. And when you have young pitchers who look nervous, like the moment is too big for them, this isn't a playoff game. This isn't the Royals trying to sneak into the wild card spot, or this isn't game seven of the World Series. This is a regular season game against bad teams when you're on a very below average team. There shouldn't be a ton of pressure.
I'm going to take my my talk show host hat off and put my reporter hat on.
Sure.
I'm going to post a question to you. Again, and I know you said there's calls for the pitching coach and the hitting coach, but how much of this falls on Mike Matheny, because he's the head coach, manager, sure, whatever you want to call him, and those decisions should fall upon him, obviously, and Dayton Moore. I mean, how much is he to blame for what we're seeing out here on the field? Because he can make, obviously, the obvious changes.
There's nothing he can really do. You only get the players you're given. You can't all of a sudden, like, for example, I'm not going to put it all on Dayton Moore. I'm not going to put it all on Mike Matheny. The pitching coach and hitting coach, unfair or fair, I know it's not their fault. I understand that. But in baseball, that's the first person to go.
But again, I ask the question, do you side with the fans? Do you side with this rumblings that someone should go? And if so, who?
I would say hitting coach would be the first option, Terry Bradshaw. I don't personally believe he should go, because I don't believe it's his fault. I don't think there's anything he can personally do. It's not his fault Jorge Soler decided to fall off the face of the earth. It's not his fault that Hunter Dozier.
Well, he got 14 hits, so I would.
Singles. But see, the point is, you're not paying Soler. You're not paying Dozier to hit singles. You're paying these guys to drive in runs. Runners in scoring position.
I mean, they had four doubles.
And you put up three runs.
I mean, what,
they're in again, a historic blunder. Two of their last 38, they've came through with runners in scoring position. Two of their last 38. Historically terrible.
That's why I posed the question to you, who should be held accountable?
It's going to be Terry Bradshaw first. I don't think he should be. It's just the way baseball works. It goes with the hitting coach, pitching coach. Those are always the first to go. If you think back to a couple years ago, a few years ago, who was the first to go? They tried bringing George Brett back in as a hitting experiment. Like, at the end of the day, fair or unfair, this is just how it works in the baseball world. I don't necessarily think that changing the hitting or pitching coach is going to do anything. Typically, all that does is wake the players up saying, oh, bleep, we need to get our bleep together or else we could be cut, we could be let go. This is just very frustrating after what was once a promising start turned into what looks like the worst team in baseball.
Yeah, the biggest disappointment I have is that you should be able to beat the team that you should be able to beat.
Exactly.
And they were able to do this earlier when the season began and early in the season against the Detroit Tigers, and now they've lost their last two to them now. And
they play tonight, and guess what? Casey Mize is pitching for Detroit, and he's been great this year. And by the way, he is a rookie who's actually produced.
Mm.
You know, it's just frustrating when you see other teams have highly touted prospects. They come up produce right away. The Royals seemingly have guys that are highly touted prospects. They take 3 years to develop in the majors.
The other question I have before we move on is, though, that, you know, we see a lot of, I guess, inconsistencies, and that's why I'm asking who should be held accountable, because, yes, they gave up 10 runs last night. They scored. It was 13 runs scored. But I think maybe a couple nights ago it was like 2-1 or something, maybe 3-1. And tonight, if the pitching for the Royals doesn't, you know, I mean, only gives up 2-3 runs against the Tigers and still lose, I mean, who's going to be to blame on that?
Part of it has to be on Dayton Moore. If you look at the lineup that's out there tonight, Matheny can only do what he's given. Benintendi's hurt. Mondesi is hurt. I understand that. I get that. But when you have Jerrod Dyson batting seventh, you have Michael.
He was on the bench. So.
And guess what? Jerrod Dyson actually had a fine season. But he shouldn't be batting seventh in a normal good lineup. He should be batting about ninth to be your secondary leadoff hitter. You have eighth, you have Michael A. Taylor, who's been pretty horrendous ever since his hot start. Batting ninth, you have Nicky Lopez. That is one of the worst 7-8-9s in recent memory. You have Kelvin Gutierrez, who has been miserable, batting fifth. There's just no one. We thought this was going to be a deep lineup, and injuries and underproduction from two of your major guys. Again, if Soler and Dozier were hitting, we probably would say this is fine. If Dozier and Soler were doing what they did, what they were expected to do, this team's probably 500 still. They're not.
So you're not expecting much from Minor tonight, is what you're saying?
I like Minor. I would go under tonight because I think Casey Mize is a good pitcher. I think Detroit wins, and I know you're betting. That's why you asked this. So
no,
I would say
I
it goes
under.
I hadn't
thought about it until I saw, you know, they did lose 10-3 last night. And so, yeah, I'm curious about that.
The Royals lineup looks terrible. Casey Mize has been good. Mike Minor's pitched pretty well for the most part. Detroit has a bad team. I would go under. I do, before we switch to NFL, because I do want to talk some Chiefs with you. We got to hear from Frank Clark and some other guys that I want to play some audio from. I want to play this audio from Brad Keller, because this, to me, was really interesting, especially if you read between the lines.
I feel like my last two outings, I've honestly felt, as crazy as it sounds, I felt my best. I know it's hard to say because the results haven't been there, but you know, I feel like tonight I found my slider. Felt like I had a lot more depth on my slider tonight. Felt like commanded both sides of the plate with my fastball. Mixed four-seam and sinker pretty well. I mean, same thing with last start. And just don't have any results to show for it. So it's tough to look at the positive. I mean, you know, talking to Cal, I mean, he said the same thing. He's like, I don't know what to say to you. It's like, well, obviously something's got to change. We can't keep doing the same thing and expect different results. Like, we got to go out there and get better. And so that's what we got to do. Go back to the drawing board and get better. Look for the next one.
The thing that really stood out was Cal, the pitching coach, talked to him, says, I don't know what to tell you. What do you mean? You just got absolutely lit up by a terrible offense. What do you mean you don't know what to tell him? Something has to change. Like, you don't know what to tell him? You can't be like, all right, maybe don't throw down the middle. Maybe your mechanics are off a little bit, or maybe you need to get more movement on your fastball because that thing is straight as a string. You don't know. You're the pitching coach.
That's what I always tell my brother, I mean, there's always tomorrow. That's what in this case, another 5 days.
Yeah. Just that, and again, I don't think Brad Keller's trying to throw Cal Eldred under the bus there. I don't think that's what his game plan was, but that's what it came off like to me. If you're telling me you're screwing up, you're doing a terrible job, and your boss just goes, eh, I don't want to tell you.
Then I can see why fans would want somebody's head. If your pitcher responded in that manner, I would agree. So, I mean, but I'll take the under tonight. If that's the direction, I'm gonna be real upset though if I take the under.
Yeah, and all of a sudden the Royals are gonna explode for like 11 runs. Yeah, I know. I get it. That would be total Kansas City.
Yeah, I gotta have a parlay, so I'm gonna have that in the basketball game tonight.
Moving on, because I don't want to dwell on the disaster of the Royals. Let's move to the disaster of Frank Clark. No. Hear me out.
I've got to, because I am just befuddled by your comments.
Frank Clark said something. Again, this is between the lines, but something that really made me, I almost want to laugh a little bit. Let me play this quick clip for you, and I'll tell you why.
Man, I think it kind of opens up the game more, honestly. You find a lot of times, you know, we made it easier on teams to make adjustments and stuff last year when me and Chris lined up on the same side. And, I mean, that's due to the position. You know, it's only so much you can help when, you know, you got one guy playing three tech, you got another guy playing the end. But, you know, Chris going to the end position, it just opens up the game much more. You know, it makes it harder. You know, now they got to pick a size, you know, whether we're going to slide right or we're going to slide left. You know, we just know now it's a higher chance that we're going to be able to get, you know, better looks and stuff like that from the offense.
He's acting like they got to decide if they're going to double team Chris or double team me. Dude, no one's going to choose it. You weren't double teamed last year. It's like saying I'm playing with Michael Jordan and be like, yeah, they got to watch out for us. Like, we're going to do a great job. No. Like, I give the ball to Michael and he's going to dominate. It's not a wee thing. Like,
yeah, we're going to score 33 between each other. He's going to go 31, I'll score 2.
Yeah, like that's what it seems like. Just to me, I think I get what Frank Clark is saying. He has had some great success in the past, but the previous regular season successes have not come with Kansas City. He had that great playoffs, don't get me wrong. But no one is going to say, yeah, Frank Clark was a beast last year. No one was planning for Frank Clark last year.
If I remember, I thought his answer was based off of playing with Jaren Reed and having his best season there, and then I think trying to tie that into Chris Jones.
So Jaren Reed, this is what they've been saying as far as –
because they said it's when he's had his best season.
Jaren Reed is playing defensive tackle. That's a lock, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
They've been talking a lot about moving Chris Jones to D-end, whether that's the majority of snaps at end, whether that's a 50-50 split, whether that's occasionally. We're going to find out. They wouldn't move Chris Jones to end if Frank Clark was being productive. Kansas City feels like they need to get production at the end because they think they can get by with Jaren Reed in the middle. If Frank Clark was producing, you leave Chris Jones there, and you have an absolute – probably the best duo in the NFL in the middle. That's my only pushback. Yeah, like, if Frank Clark was producing like he is paid
wrong. So if you're moving Jones to the end, who's playing in the middle along with Jaren Reed?
Is Derek Nnadi, Colin Saunders. Oh. You pretty much put a run stuffer in the middle.
Okay.
The thing with this is Chris Jones, I think, would make a fine defensive end. But he makes an elite defensive tackle.
I think Chris Jones is up for. I think he's up for the challenge. And what we don't know is how much of that may have been his idea. Now, sure. I know he addresses the media. I know we talked to him tomorrow, so perhaps that might be a question that I asked. This move. How much of that is coaching? How much is that your idea that you may want to try and. Look, man, I mean, he's got, because his money's secure.
He'll do whatever.
Yeah, I would have a problem with it because maybe that's what he feels like he may need to do to try to get those quote-unquote 20 sacks.
The thing is, the quickest way, the best way to get to the quarterback, shortest distance. You're going up against inferior guards and centers up the middle.
I'm with you with a straight line, but... How many double teams? How many double triple teams has he faced there versus what he may or may not see on the end?
You're going to see a left tackle or a right tackle and a guard and maybe a tight end chipping you. I mean, Aaron Donald gets doubled and triple teamed. He still produces. Chris Jones got doubled and tripled last year. He still produced.
Hey, I'm not, no disrespect to Chris Jones, but I'm not putting nobody in that category with
him.
Sure,
no one is Aaron Donald, but he is in the – number two, my personal opinion is number two. DeForest Buckner is probably number three.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I'll put J.J. Watt only because he's been a three-time, but J.J. Watt is an older version, but, because he was unstoppable when he won those awards.
Sure.
But, yeah, but putting Chris Jones in, I'm just, like I said, we'll ask tomorrow, and that'd be a good question to ask, whether or not it was his idea or the coach's idea, and what type of, because – I think he's a pretty good athlete from what we've seen and from what he's shown on the field. So I am curious to see his adjustment, because, again, it's not like they're doing any hitting. Now I guess he got mandatory training camp, mini camp. So I'm not sure how much he's actually, putting in the work at that particular position or what have you, where, you got pads and stuff on and you're going against, your starting offensive, lineman that you mentioned. But that's a good question to post to tomorrow that I'll try to see if I can ask.
Just the funny part was still Frank Clark saying they schemed last year against me and Chris Jones because we were on the same side. They schemed against Chris. I don't think anyone was scared of Frank Clark. Have you looked at
– there's a lot of things funny about when Frank Clark comments or whatever, but I'm going to leave that alone.
Just if you looked at – the tape last year, you look back at the numbers of how many times Frank got double teamed. A lot of people like to act like Frank Clark is getting doubled every single time. He had an extremely almost entirely one-on-one situations, he was good in the run game. Give Frank Clark his due. He was good in the run game. Against trying to get after the quarterback, he was just a guy. He was Taco Charlton. He was Okafor. I mean, he was just a guy, Emmanuel Ogba. That's who Frank Clark was when he was trying to get after the quarterback last year.
The interesting thing about Frank Clark, especially in the presser, is because you never know where his answers are going to go. He always looked like he's at an elevated level from everyone else that's in, you know, that's on the Zoom call, and make of that for what you will. But, you know, I've got to say that, you know, when you ask him a question, he's going to give you his honest version of it. Like, he doesn't hold nothing back. And, you know, he may try to, quote unquote, censor himself so he doesn't say the wrong thing or whatever, you know, like curse word or something. But you will get an honest, unvarnished Frank Clark, you know, when you ask him a question. And like I said, I don't agree with everything he says, because I think he's, you know, up in space at times, you know. So I just, you know, I take what he says, you know, at face value. I don't dwell on it because the numbers are what they are.
They are what they are. So he was asked about his cap number. I'm going to play this.
I think that was Serena who asked him that.
And then we'll come. Either Serena or Todd, I think, or Leib.
Yeah.
But either way, we'll play it. We'll come back, and we can talk about this.
One more thing that drives me, though, you know, than the cap number and stuff like that, though. You know, I got, you know, teammates, you know, who got my back. I got, you know, a coaching staff who got my back. So I think that's what matters the most, you know, and everything is in-house. So, you know, I don't really look at everything outside of, you know, my team and, you know, what's going on in the NFL and stuff like that. I just honestly show up to work and do the best that I can every day.
He said the right things. Give him props.
I don't even know what the hell that's supposed to mean, but.
Because this is a contract year for him. He knows that this is a contract year. I know on paper he still has.
No, he's cut after this year.
Exactly. He has 2 years left on his contract. They're voidable. They're cut. Chiefs can get out. So when you ask him about this, he's like, oh, the coaching staff loves me, and the players, they want to be with me. They got my back. Well, the coaching staff's playing you, too, because you're making $20 million a year. They're not going to play Taco Charlton, who's getting, what, 1.5 over you. This is a contract year for Frank Clark. Does he step up? Because if he doesn't, he's going to be just like Melvin Ingram, a guy who used to be good, who used to put up numbers, who is an aging veteran, and we've seen what that market is right now. Justin Houston, Melvin Ingram, a lot of those previous guys who were good, a lot of those edge guys still out there looking for work.
If I remember correctly, I think Melvin Ingram is a little bit older than Frank Clark. I think Frank Clark's only like year.
Sure, but Frank.
I'm not trying to go back with you forth through on that, because I get what you're saying, but what I'm saying is that Frank Clark is much younger. This is last year, period, in Kansas City. Now, he's going to clean it up, and that's fine. He talked about his teammates got his back. Again, I don't know what they got to do with his contract situation, your teammates, because they're not going to be the ones paying you. His cap hit, his guarantees run out this year. There's no way that Kansas City is paying him $20 million to come back and play next year. So he can come back on a reduced number, or Kansas City will go out and bring somebody in at a much cheaper rate, because they're going to use that money for offensive purposes. I mean, so.
Or to fill his role with someone else.
Well, that's what but they're not going to. I mean, Aaron Donald's not going to be on the market. So, I mean, I don't know the current contract situation for players at his position that's going to be free agents next year. So
sure,
when that comes around, and granted, even though the cap number is going to go up, you can afford them, but you're not. Now, his production has to be something like it was in 2019, where he helped the team win the Super Bowl. But if he just becomes a member of the team that wins the Super Bowl and not like a defensive force or a defensive factor on a defensive end as you're leading and going through the playoffs, then yeah, I mean, I can easily see a scenario, because as you've always said, you know, you know, the Chiefs can't justify paying all this money on for two or three players on the defensive line or on defense. So again, I've always said that Frank Clark has gone after 3 years, you know, and that, because
everyone knew that when the contract was signed, for the most part.
No, obviously Frank didn't know that, but
obviously Brad Beach did.
Yeah. So I mean, but now, you know, I mean, if you outlive your contract, I mean, if you play out, you know, because look, you look at Tyron. Tyron has exceeded his contract. Well,
sure. Actually,
let me take it back. He's done everything in his contract that he was paid to do. So both the team and the player have gotten their money's worth. So I don't want to say because he has not played out his contract. He has not exceeded his contract. I'm someone who's a strong believer. When you sign someone on the dotted line, that's your word, that's your bond. So all this going back and, you know, and we may talk about in the future, Jamal Adams, players who are sitting out because they want a new contract, I don't work like that. You know, so for me, I can understand.
Sure.
And I'm not someone that's going to gripe on Brett Veach on not doing a contract extension. If he wants to let the contract play out and let the chips fall where they may next year, I mean, that's fine. Tyron's still getting paid. Chiefs still getting his production, and it is what it is. I mean, this might be going off on a different tangent, but if I'm Frank Clark, you know, play your contract now. If it's a matter of his guarantees run out and you can save money by cutting him on the cap hit, then, you know, I understand business is business. But as it relates to if it's the players, my thing is if you're the players and you don't worry about the guarantees, then you need to sign a more fully guaranteed contract versus, sure. You know, yes, it's $105 million, but only $60 million is guaranteed. Well, it's only $60 million
then. Yeah. So I mean, and that's just the way the NFL works. They like throwing out large numbers. Yeah, except for quarterbacks in general for the most part.
No, except for Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins and rookies, first-round draft picks.
Yeah. Either way, Frank Clark, I think he has a breakout year, or at least a very good year, because the contract year never fails. If he does not have double-digit sacks, if he's not a factor getting the run game, if he does not –
Frank's biggest concern is being available, is making sure he doesn't have bubble guts throughout the year, because that's what's been hurting him the last couple of years.
Also going to play a part. I think he's not going to miss. I don't think he's going to miss a game because the reason why I think this, the contract year never fails. Just in my opinion, if he does not have a very
you do realize Chris Jones, you know, missed the first playoff game. That was a contract year for him too.
And he got paid. But Chris Jones is different.
Chris Jones is better than
Frank
Clark.
Don't
forget, Chris Jones had to come back in that Tennessee Titans game because the Chiefs lost. He wasn't getting the contract decision. So.
But Chris Jones and Frank Clark, to me, are two different situations. Chris Jones, I think, is the second-best player to his position. Frank Clark's not. Frank Clark is not the second-best end. He's not the second-best edge guy in the NFL.
I had never heard of Frank Clark before we signed him, so so that's –
Well, he was very good in Seattle. He was a very good player, but end of the day.
But when you think of Seattle, you think of Cam Chancellor, you think of Sherman, you think of Bobby Wagner. You don't think of
first guy that came to mind.
He wasn't the fifth guy that came to mind.
He got overpaid. Plain and simple. I don't think Kansas City is going to complain too much because they got a Super Bowl out of it and a second Super Bowl appearance. I'm not going to say Frank Clark was a difference maker, but he did have a good playoffs.
So playing devil's advocate then, because I know you're big on Tyron getting a contract extension,
yeah.
Right?
I would love to.
So that being the case, then would you continue to pay Frank Clark then on his current contract?
Oh, no chance. Tyron Matthews is a top, I would say, top three safety in the NFL, at least top three at his position. I don't think Frank Clark's top 20 right now.
Is that just a matter of opinion or a matter of looking at numbers?
If you're looking at numbers, Frank Clark's definitely not top 20.
No argument there.
I was being generous. I'm going off the brand and not the production, not the worth.
No, I don't disagree. I'm giving you a hard time. I don't disagree with you on that.
My last thing that I just want to say before we go to break and just whatever we want to switch it up to, I do think Frank Clark has a big year. I'm not sitting here saying I don't like Frank Clark. I'm not saying it was a horrendous deal because the Chiefs did get a Super Bowl. They did have production from him in the playoffs. I get that. But I do think it's a breakout year. I think he plays in all the games because, again, the contract year never fails.
I hope so. I hope I'm wrong because, I mean, obviously that would play well in Kansas City's favor. I just – The numbers are what they are, and you have to show me more than you can tell me.
Believe it. Believe it. We'll take a quick break. This is Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Darren, I don't know if you saw this. Derek Carr, Raiders quarterback.
I saw that where he talked about retiring if the Raiders traded him.
He says, if the Raiders basically are going to trade me,
I'm just gonna
retire. His exact quote was, I'd probably quit football if I had to play for somebody else. I'm
Ain't
a Raider
gonna lose no sleep
for my entire life.
Ain't nobody finna lose no sleep off that dude.
I'll say one thing. If you are a Raiders fan, you like hearing that. I mean, if you are a fan of that team and you have your quarterback.
What's he supposed to say?
Most guys aren't going to say, I would retire before I played for another team. I mean, Derek Carr fits the villain role very well. He fits that Raiders mantra.
You know what that does? That hurts his trade value. That's what he's trying to do. Because what
he
team is going to trade for him? That's what I'm saying. That's my point. What team would trade for him? Because, we're not going to offer you nothing if this guy, for example, let's say Deshaun Watson becomes available. Of course you're going to want to trade Derek Carr, but he's not going to want to go to Houston. He's just going to retire. So he would mess the trade up.
I just think, one, I don't think it's true. Like, I think if he was traded to another team, I think he's playing. I just think it's good for the fans.
Well, this is going to be their first year with fans, obviously, moving to the new stadium, going to Las Vegas. So he wants to endear himself with them, which, again, I'm not mad.
I think it worked. Personally, if I heard Patrick say, I would retire before I played for another team, you know full well everyone here in Kansas City would be losing their mind and saying, this is amazing.
He's taking you to two Super Bowls. Derek Carr is...
Sure.
He won your division in Oakland, so...
Sure. No, I get it's different. I'm just saying, I think... It's a good look. It's a good look for Derek Carr.
It's not a bad look. I just don't want to say it's good because it's like there's no upside if you're the Vegas Raiders. Like, okay, cool, he wants to be with us. All right. I mean, anybody who's getting that type of money from us, of course, they're going to want to stay with us. If you're a fan, you're like, okay, that's good to know, but we don't want you. It's kind of like Drew Lock in Denver. We don't want you.
Someone who is making good money but still is not going to show up is Jamal Adams. Remember how Jamal Adams had the whole ordeal with the New York Jets? Remember that?
Yeah.
Now Jamal Adams is not going to participate in the team's mandatory minicamp. Sounds more like a Jamal Adams situation than anything.
You got to remember what they gave up to get him. So he's going to get paid his money. He's going to get a new contract. Some teams are just built differently, man. I mean, it's kind of like who was it? Jalen Ramsey. You know, I mean, now he showed up obviously for the virtual stuff, but he didn't want to deal with it. He didn't want to talk about the contract stuff with the media, whatever. And next thing you know, hell, he's the highest paid cornerback in football at $21 million or something. So. And it's funny, he wants to recruit Stephen Gilmore to come to the Rams if possible, which that would just – now if he were to go there with that defense, you might be able to sell me on the Rams, possibly get to Super Bowl, even with Matt Stafford. I don't believe in Matt Stafford. But defensively, you give me Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, and Stephon Gilmore where you can't throw to the outside. Whew, get Wade Phillips out of retirement on that one.
Just the only thing I'll say about Jamal Adams, I know he's seeking a new contract. I know he said he's missing for personal family matters. When you have already missed a lot of stuff, you've sat out, you've demanded trades. A lot. When you say
he played last year with him, so it's not like he didn't play, but when you say personal matters. I mean, his girlfriend, wife, whatever, could be having a baby. I mean,
sure. I would say that when you've already been labeled a, I don't want to say malcontent, but when you've already demanded trades and not finished at your contract early in your young career.
But you know what, though? If I remember correctly, I think he made the Pro Bowl at two positions last year.
He's amazing.
But
Le'Veon Bell used to be amazing, too.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell.
I'm just saying, it's not good when players early in their career get labeled as a diva. Juju Smith-Schuster is already trying to get off that mantra.
Here's my pushback to that. He was drafted, I think, what, number four overall?
Extremely high.
No, yeah. So I think he was drafted number four. And so, the Jets drafted him. He was, he was getting paid well out of his, I think he was paid like $23 million for his rookie contract.
Sixth overall.
Sixth overall. So I think he might have probably made about $23 million. And they picked up his fifth year option. But again, if you are, he was in the same draft class as who?
Oh, I just deleted it.
Okay.
But you're right. Just under $23 million, drafted sixth overall. He's made already good money, but he wants a new contract. That was the whole reason why he would leave the Jets.
First of all, it's the Jets. If I'm gonna play for the Jets, I'm not taking a 50% cut like this guy just did yesterday.
Jamison Crowder just did.
That's Jamison Crowder. That ain't Jamal Adams. I'm saying, look, Jamal Adams is an All Pro, not a Pro Bowl, an All Pro. And so with that comes expectations. With that comes money. He has lived up to everything that he is supposed to have been in New York. He especially lived up to everything that Seattle traded for when they brought him in, because he ended up leading the team in sacks and interceptions last year. So if I'm Jamal Adams in his position, damn right, I want a new contract. And they're going to pay him because they gave up two first-round draft picks to get him.
Oh, he'll get paid.
He wants it now versus later.
There are right ways to go about it, in my opinion.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Aaron Rodgers sitting out, is it a right way or wrong way?
Wrong way. I think Aaron Rodgers is doing it.
I just want to make sure you're consistent. That's all.
100% consistent. I don't like what – I don't – and you even kind of said it. If you sign the contract, that's a contract you signed. Jamal Adams signed that contract when he was drafted sixth overall.
Yeah, well, hold on. He signed that contract with
the
New
Jets
York.
When they complained and traded.
I know, but when he traded, though, all bets are off on that.
Sure.
because they know what they're getting, and everyone who follows the business knows that. Just like the Rams did for Jalen Ramsey when they got him from Jacksonville, when he wanted a new contract and he wanted out of there. They traded for him. They gave him two first-round draft picks. They paid the man. Everybody knows the same situation is going to have to happen with Seattle. Now,
he's getting paid. He knows he is going to get paid.
Well, he may want
to go to minicamp. Just to me, you don't want to get the label of a malcontent or the label of a diva early on in your career, because you will be fighting that stigma the rest of your career. That's all I'm saying. Juju Smith-Schuster is all of a sudden labeled a diva because he does TikTok videos. I mean, you can get labeled so and so, and don't think that didn't. In my opinion, that's hurt his trade value because people think he's a diva now. If he didn't do that TikTok video dancing on the people's,
here's the thing.
He would have got more than one. What was it? 1 year, $8 million.
Oh, I know we somehow ended up on Juju, but his situation is different as well, because you got to remember, he was a number two to AB. He, won the team MVP because he wasn't getting double teamed. AB was getting a double team, so his numbers went up. Then they got rid of AB, and during that whole time when they got rid of AB, Juju was trying to play the sorry feeling
sure.
character, because because their whole thing was. His whole thing was, well, man, I looked up to you, AB, when I was in college, and I DM'd you, and blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, when he became the number one receiver, he started letting people feed his head and feed his ego. And the next he wants to go out there, like you said, do the TikTok on. And you don't do the things that he was doing, dancing on opponents' logo and stuff like that, because you get your ass whipped, And so,
sure.
and he got blasted very, very nicely, I think, on one of the Sunday and Monday Night Football games. And then his play also didn't warrant him being a number one receiver when it came time for him to get paid. His numbers didn't warrant it.
You don't think AB being labeled a diva hurt his contract?
I don't. But in AB's defense, AB put up the numbers with it, though.
But that kind of is proving the point of
that ain't, no, no.
If you are a diva or labeled a diva, it will hurt. Even if you put numbers up, it will hurt your contract.
But again,
Le'Veon Bell.
One of the biggest things that says production versus I think it's risk or reward or something. But again, they put up a lot of bull jive with AB because he was a 4- or 5-time All-Pro, and his numbers proved him to be the best receiver. So you put up with that. How you think Randy Moss survived for so long? Because, you know.
But don't you think, to an extent, Randy could have made more if he wasn't labeled a diva? AB could have made more this offseason if he wasn't labeled a diva. We know AB's a great wide receiver.
AB also had some other issues, too.
Sure.
I mean, so that, but, I mean, think AB about had off-the-field issues, and they also had a lot. Because, look, you can be a diva and not be an issue in the locker room on the field or anything like that. Michael Irvin would tell you he's a diva.
Sure.
But, you know, he was considered the leader of the Cowboys or whatever.
Like Le'Veon Bell, for example, is going to have a tough time trying to get another contract because he's now labeled as a diva.
Guys like
guys like Frank Gore, he's not productive anymore. You know why he's still getting a job? Because he's a hard worker. Yeah, he doesn't complain. Good mentor.
He is still productive to be in the league. But nobody's considered Le'Veon Bell no damn diva. They just don't like him.
Sure. Malcontent, whatever you want to call it. My point is, if you have all this disputes, especially at a young age, it's very difficult to dispel those notions. If I were Jamal Adams, I would not be trying to prove a point or be doing this. I don't think it helps you in contract negotiations. I think it hurts you.
I disagree with that one, just because at the end of the day, he put up on the field, and he's going to make sure that they quote-unquote pay him, because otherwise you could be in a situation where you're playing hardball like Dak Prescott had to do with Jerry Jones, and you don't want that situation.
Yeah. No, I think Jamal Adams is a phenomenal player. I agree. This wouldn't be the route that I would go. But let's take a quick break. We'll come back, finish the show, talk NBA. I want to make sure we have enough time to talk some NBA.
Yes, sir.
This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Switching gears to NBA talk now. We'll start with the, I would say, choke game, which was the Sixers and Hawks. Hawks pull it out, move the series to 2-2. I think the big storyline here was Joel Embiid going 4-of-20 from the field, 0-of-12 in the second half. It was just brutal. And at the end of the day, that's all it was it was just a brutal stretch, an 18-point lead. Sixers had an 18-point lead. They blew it to a less talented Hawks team.
Dude, I thought about you so much last night that it was actually questionable why I was thinking about you so much. But when I saw they were leading my test, like, damn, I'm never going to end this come tomorrow morning. And, of course, you know, we both picked them to win. At least I was 1-for-2. You were 0-for-2 last night.
I was 0-for yesterday.
But I think the bigger concern would have been, for me, Ben Simmons, because he almost had a triple-double at the half and then only scored, like, 2 points in the second half, maybe 1 or 2 rebounds and 1 assist. Like, the first half, I thought dude was going to have a monster game, just like Joel Embiid. And he did. He had 20-some rebounds.
Sure, he had 21 rebounds. But you can't go 4-of-20 and expect to win.
But you forgot what I told you, though. I did say that Atlanta would make adjustments from that third game. Now, they made some in-game adjustments for them, but they also started hitting shots, too. I mean, they were hitting a lot of shots. And like you said, because Clint Capella was averaging like 14 rebounds a game instead of coming to the series, and then this series he's only had like 8, 9, or 10 or whatever. So, but Bogdanovich, you know, started hitting some shots. Trae Young started hitting some shots. And, you know, John Collins, you know, was able to get a lot of rebounds that Joel Embiid was throwing up. And he took some questionable shots as well. You know, he took some questionable threes. It was like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you're 7 foot.
You know how I feel about that. But
yeah,
you know.
I know. I'm with you. I think that was the biggest takeaway. Doc Rivers, we have this quick clip from Doc I want to listen to.
Yeah.
And we'll touch on it right after.
We stopped passing. You know, I thought that we started the game off that way. Then we got back in the ball movement. Then we went back to hero basketball. You know, basically everybody wanted to be the hero instead of just trusting the team, trusting each other. So, you when you do that, you usually lose, especially when the other team outworks you the whole game. And that's what they did today.
Doc Rivers not mincing words there.
No, he didn't.
But you touched on it. Ben Simmons had a lot of assists at one point, and then they played hero ball. They stopped ball rotation, stopped moving the ball, and not Tyrese Maxey, Shake Milton, I believe it was. Shake Milton started jacking up shots. Why? Joel Embiid, stop jacking up shots. Go down low. Stop trying to get foul calls. Just beat your man. Like, Joel, you were an MVP candidate. You are better than Clint Capella. You are better than anyone in the NBA they can throw on you. Go to work. And that just to me was the big storyline was they all tried playing individual basketball, like Doc Rivers said. They got away from their bread and butter, and they tried going one-on-one. This team was not built to go one-on-one. Sixers are built for ball rotation, ball movement, and being team basketball.
That part is true. And, look, I mean, what, game five is tomorrow. I think they bounce back. I do think they win that game. I think it'll go back to Atlanta. And, well, it will go back to Atlanta, but I think Atlanta will pull it off him. I think we're looking at a seven-game series. I know it's best two out of three. They did recapture home court advantage, the Philadelphia 76ers, by winning game number three. Again, it's not a good look, but I don't expect Joel Embiid to have that type of performance in game five.
Yeah, I think 4 of 20, 0 of 12 in the second half, that was a blip on the radar for a MVP candidate. Now, the second game, the final game of the night, Utah falling to the Clippers. Kawhi dunking dude into oblivion.
That was mad disrespectful.
But Clippers won by 14. Paul George had a great game. Is this Clippers team? Is this it? Are they just slow starters? Like, again, the last series, they got down. They came back against the Mavs. This series against Utah, they were down two games. They come storming back. Are they just slow starters and they turn it on? Who ends up winning this series?
Who did I have? Did I have Utah?
I don't remember.
I think I had Utah in the series just because of how they look. But, man, I had Utah just because looking at how they were playing and how Phoenix playing at home. I think the home court is going to be the decisive factor, man. I think it goes seven games. But it's just something about playing, seeing how the crowd is in Utah and Phoenix that really doesn't, for me, look like it's going to serve well for the visiting teams. And they played, they were down by a lot, because I looked at it. I was watching the game, and I saw, okay, it was like, 23-12, change of 10, it was like 44-40. I was like, what the hell did I just miss? Like, they were down by 24 points. Could have been more of a blowout, but Donovan Mitchell, he's got to get out to a faster start than what he's done. He scored, like 17 points in the second quarter, and I forgot what he scored in the third. But the first quarter, they're coming out too slow for my liking, and that's something that has to be addressed, which I don't think that'll be a problem playing at home in front of the crowd, energy and stuff like that. But I do believe that the home crowd makes a difference. So I'm going Utah Jazz in seven games.
Man, I don't know. This, to me, what's great about this NBA playoffs, everything is so close. The Bucks, the Nets. Anytime you think a series is about to get out of hand, something crazy happens and they even it.
One other thing, though, and they touched on a little bit last night on Inside NBA. Mike Conley's going to have to come back.
Mike Conley is huge.
I didn't think his injury was that bad.
As a super fan of travel, I simply can't stand.
Yeah.
Thank you, ESPN, for the Travelocity commercial that just decided to play.
Yeah, I thought it was hotels.com. But
maybe it's the Captain Obvious guy. Yeah, you're right, hotels.com.
But I will say that Conley has to come back because, as they touched on it last night, you see Donovan Mitchell, even though he's balling out, he's doing too much one-man show versus Mike Conley, who's able to get everybody involved. Because Rudy Gobert has been kind of like, you know, the Clippers have been able to take him out of his ball game, and because the ball is so much in Donovan Mitchell's hand and Jordan Clarkson's hand, they're not, you know, they're not really the real facilitators of the team to ever get everybody else involved.
100% with you, because I do think Mike Conley is the offensive facilitator while Mitchell's the offensive scorer. Yeah. And right now, without Conley, he's trying to be the facilitator as well, and we're seeing how that plays out. Not well. Tonight's game, quickly, who do you have? Bucks, Nets. James Harden is hopeful to return.
If Harden plays and finishes the game, I got Brooklyn. Well, look, man, I'm going with Brooklyn anyway. I got them in the series, so I'm about to go with them.
You got ride or die?
Got ride or die.
I remember originally I went with the Bucks before this series started. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I forced you to stay there, so.
All right. We got one going then. I got the Bucks. You got the Nets.
I ain't feeling good about it, though.
Neither do I. This was Darren and
Stone, but I've lost 41 pounds, so that matters.
Great job, Darren. We'll talk about all that and more tomorrow on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. We are out.